Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I am proud to be speaking to Bill Hinburn of Super Strength Training. Greetings and welcome, Bill. How are you, sir?
Doing well, and you?
I'm doing great. I've been working out to your book, Muscle Control by Maxick, with 54 full-page illustrations from special photographs, and I'm enjoying it.
Oh, good. That's great.
I'm finding as I get older, going back to the early days of physical culture, there are some gems in there that really add spice and variety to my workouts. So thank you for keeping that in print.
Oh, I'm really glad you appreciate it. It's a very popular title.
Now, I received your email, and it celebrated Jack LaLanne. And Jack LaLanne, I haven't thought about him in years, but for this past week, he's been popping up in conversations and in emails. So I figure maybe the universe is saying, let's devote some time to Jack on the show.
Oh, he was quite a character. I talked to him several times by telephone, and the guy is just a bundle of energy. I mean, if you talk to him for 5 minutes, you're up out of your chair moving, you know, just the kind of guy he was.
Yeah, he really inspired people. Thinking back on my childhood, aside from the Sword and Sandal films, Jack LaLanne was really a big impetus towards getting involved in physical fitness on a daily basis. I remember the TV show he used to play on our little black and white TV.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and he used to sing at the end. Yeah. Had his dog Happy at his side, a little German Shepherd. Yeah. Yeah, and he had the, he wore the leotards and the organ music in the background. Always had a chair. There was always a chair there that he used as a prop for a variety of different exercises. But, oh, yeah, he was very popular during the 50s. I remember as a kid watching him.
Do you know what inspired him to start working out? With a lot of the folks from that time, there was some sort of physical disability or some sort of life circumstance that made them want to become stronger and more powerful. Do you know what Jack's story was?
He had... as a child, he had a problem, had a severe temper, and I know that he met Paul Bragg, who was a big health enthusiast back in the day. In fact, he's still, of course, he's been dead now for years, but he had a product that's still available. I use it, and it's Paul Bragg's vinegar.
Yes.
You take this vinegar, and it's very healthy, you know. But he started out as a kid. He had, like I say, he had a bad temper, and he was addicted to sugar, and he ate a lot of the wrong food and stuff like that. He had headaches, and he dropped out of high school at 14, and like I say, he met Paul Bragg, and Paul Bragg turned him around. Probably the biggest influence on him, he changed his diet, and he felt that that this would help diet and exercise. And of course, he went into the service. He's in the Navy, and it just, turned him around as far as, training. And when he came home, in 1936, he opened a health and fitness club in Oakland, California. He's from California. And where he would supervise people on exercise and what have you. He was probably the first exercise nut, you know, as people talk about, people, being a nut case in a variety of different ways. And at that time, everybody thought he was a little off. You know, even the doctor said, nah, you don't want to do what he does. You know, it's the wrong thing. And he designed a lot of exercise machines. He designed the original Smith machine. Although a guy by the name of, his last name was Smith. Rudy.
Yeah,
Rudy
what
Smith.
I with the Smith
yeah.
Machine.
He was the one who actually put it into, made it happen. That's what he did. And later on, he wrestled for a while. And,
I did not know that.
Became friends with the world famous Ed Strangler Lewis, who was a big deal back in the 30s, back when wrestling was real, not this nonsensey choreographed dancing now. And of course, Lou Thesz, who is a fantastic wrestler. But his gyms and training and so on, and he got involved in television. He had one of the longest running television shows for like 34 years, and it started around 1953, just a 15-minute local program, and then it went a little longer. I think it was a half hour, if I'm
yes, yeah,
I'm trying
remember.
To think.
When I was growing up, it was around half an hour. And Jack
around
LaVine.
Around 1960 is when I started to see the Jack LaVine show. You'd see him, you know, the camera would go out, would pan, and it would just be a silhouette of him doing jumping jacks, you know. And no, it wasn't. Jumping jacks were not named after him. That's something a lot of people I say, well, it's named after Jack LaLanne, you know. No.
My mind went there, too.
No, it wasn't. But he wrote several books. He appeared in some movies. His big deal was every once in a while he would do one of his endurance things. Like he tugged a tugboat. I think it was a tugboat. Around, and this is all off the top of my head, in San Francisco Bay, he tugged it. I forget from where to where, but it was quite a distance, and he did that without any assistance. And
wow.
He would do a thousand sit-ups and stuff like that. He swam. Here it is. I just looked it up. The Golden Gate in San Francisco, swam underwater with 140 pounds of air tanks and other equipment strapped to his body for a world record. He went 8,981 feet.
Wow.
That's the length of the Golden Gate in San Francisco. He also swam from Alcatraz Island to Fisherman's Wharf while handcuffed.
Yeah, I was surprised. That seems quite a feat. I know Charles Atlas used to pull trains and do things like that, even in advanced age.
Yeah.
They did those really impressive strongman stunts back there. The muscles weren't just something decorative to look at.
Right.
They proved the functional strength of the muscles that they were showing off.
Yeah. He did. He claimed a world record of 1,033 push-ups in 23 minutes. And that was on the old program You Asked For It in 1950. So I remember watching that program, see the wildest stuff you ever... Somebody would call in from, Boise, Idaho, you know. Some grandmother from Boise, Idaho would call in and and want to see something she heard about. So they'd look it up and they'd find it and you'd see it, you know. And he did 1,000 push-ups and 1,000 chin-ups in 1 hour.
Wow.
To promote his show. And well, he did a lot of different things like that. One thing I have it around here somewhere, is a genuine Jack LaLanne juicer. That was his product, is a juice machine, you know. It's like a blender. Power juicer is what it is, you know. And he would, you know, he would push that that particular item. And it's a good item. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You know, it's a pretty good thing. And he blames processed foods for a lot of the problems. He's mostly a vegetarian. Occasionally he'll have fish, but that's rare. And, of course, he takes his vitamin supplements. For breakfast, after working out for 2 hours, 2 hours of a workout, think about that.
Yeah.
It consisted of hard-boiled egg whites, a cup of broth, oatmeal with soy milk, and seasonal fruit. For dinner, he and his wife typically ate raw vegetables, egg whites, and fish. He does not drink coffee. So he exercised right up to the day he died. And
I heard people were saying that he was well into his 90s when he passed.
Yeah, he's he died at 96. Yeah, it was a shame he didn't make it to 100. You'd have heard about that.
Yeah,
you know.
Definitely.
But like I said, I used to talk to him, and you can bring up some of the stuff on the internet, videos and stuff of him doing various things. You know, I think he's on, like I say, he might be on You Ask For It. I know he's on Groucho Marx one time. And Groucho Marx, you know, he likes to get in under, he tries to get under people's skin, but
yes.
It didn't bother Jack LaLanne. He went on, you know, he just ignored it, and he went on, and he was promoting himself, you know, as he should. Yeah, you know, he got a very popular television show. And, he was the real deal. There's no doubt about it.
Do you have any of Jack LaLanne's books in your catalog? Because your catalog is phenomenally impressive. Even like looking through it, is an experience. You know, it's very retro. It's very complete and comprehensive. And it has categories that you're not likely to find easily anywhere else.
Well, I may have one in my miscellaneous books and courses. I have a page dedicated to rare books, you know, one-of-a-kind stuff that I've accumulated over the years. He's written a lot of books. I think the one he wrote before he died was Live Forever, Live Young Forever. I think that's the name of it, Live Young Forever. And I had a lot of his pamphlets and stuff like that over the years. You know, he sent me stuff, he's been on several programs, even, you know, regular programs like I Love Lucy and You Bet Your Life. That's the one I was mentioning about, you know, Groucho Marx. He's on Batman and Rowan and Martin's Laughing and stuff like that back in the day. This is all stuff back in the day. He was certainly a guru, and he's a likable guy, you know. I mean, there's a lot of gurus out there like Vince Gironda, but Vince Gironda, you had to get to know him before, you know, you'd really appreciate him. He was kind of cantankerous, but Jack LaLanne, very, very likable guy.
You in the email that you put out, you point out that Steve Reeves was also inspired by Jack LaLanne.
A lot of people were, you know. What else did you have back in the day, you know? And especially they were inspired by Jack LaLanne before Steve Reeves was in his two Hercules. Steve Reeves was only in two Hercules movies, you know, contrary to popular belief. He made a lot of other movies, but only two of them were Hercules. But that's 1957. So before that, you know, if you find anybody looking up at anybody other than a bodybuilder like John Grimmick and Reg Park and stuff like that, for the exposure that Jack O'Lane had, granted his TV show started, I think, 1961 or whatever, and that was the thing that really promoted him. But then again, it's like all the other people that are very popular. Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, it wasn't for movies. Only the bodybuilding community would know who he is.
Correct.
Reg Park, same way. Reg Park did five sword and sandal movies in the early 60s. Other than that, people wouldn't know who he was. Lou Ferrigno, that's another one. He did the Incredible Hulk. So that put his name out there. And when you have all these shows available on the internet, and people like me that try to constantly promote this type of thing, you don't. No one would ever know who they were, you know, that type of thing. But yeah, Jack O'Lane was a tremendous inspiration to a lot of people. You know, not just the bodybuilding, but the fitness. You know, the ladies. He was on at a certain time in the afternoon where the ladies could spend time in front of the TV. And he would say, all you need is a kitchen chair, and we'll go through this, you know. And he would pace you, and then he would always say, at the end of the exercise, he'd always say, now take a deep breath in.
Bill, I'm losing you.
You are. You can't hear me? Can you hear me now? Hello? Hello? Hercules, can you hear me?
Hello? Hello? Hi, Bill. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Yeah, I don't know what happened. This happened once before, a long time ago. I had a caller call me and say that they could hear you perfectly. They couldn't hear me, though. The last thing they heard is I'm losing you. Here we are.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your patience.
10 minutes plucked out of our lives forever, right?
Yes. One of the things that, as you know, I've been working on is as my years pass, I'm less able and less interested in like really tackling the heavy poundages as I once did when I was younger, when that meant everything. And I exercise every day for at least an hour. And what I find works is a combination of light weights and kettlebells. And I have all these exercise toys like a Hercules twister and so forth. Sometimes I do ascending and descending sets. Sometimes I do antagonistic sets. I vary it. Sometimes I'll introduce the X3 or I'll do Charles Atlas, the course for 12 weeks or, you know, and it keeps me interested in continuing to work out. And I noticed that by keeping my exercise fresh and different, I don't need to drop it and come back to it and drop it and come back to it. I've learned and you've taught me to schedule a week-long break every now and then, just to give my body a chance to rest and recuperate. I don't like taking off, really. I like working on the things I'm working on, you know, all the time. And now I started working out throughout the day. So instead of putting aside an hour and a half and working out, I'll work out like 10, 15 minutes in the morning. Then a few hours later, I'll work out another 10, 15, 20 minutes and spread it out throughout the day. And I find that by doing that, I've been able to add a lot of volume to what I do without it straining me over much or fatiguing me. Because I have all that time in between these mini workouts to recuperate.
Exactly right. But I think you touched on something that's very, very, very important, especially as we age, and that's variety. Keep variety in there. There's two things that should always be addressed, and this is because of the joints of the body. You know, everybody focuses on the muscles when they're young. They don't talk about joints because the joints don't hurt, okay? It's the muscles. But as you get older, the joints start to break down. Well, the entire body starts breaking down from the moment you're born. You know, that's just how it is. But the joints are important to take care of. You don't want to do any, let me say this again, you don't want to do any explosive movements. That's bad. When you're a kid, you can do all that stuff. When I was a kid, I remember playing football, martial arts, all sorts of sports where you had collisions and everything else. You just get up, you soar the next day, that's okay. It would go away. Well, as you get older, it takes more, sometimes 2-3 a week, 2 weeks, you know, for something to correct itself, you know. But as you get older, you simply can't do the explosive movements. You should start out. Warm-ups are very vital, and stretching. But it all has to be done slow and methodical, you know, and on a regular basis. If you go from one exercise, I think I explained this before one time.
Yeah.
If you do an exercise like, for example, a regular curl, you started doing a regular curl, the next day you can have a little soreness, you know, and the next day maybe a little soreness, but it goes away. Okay, so you're doing a regular curl. The soreness is gone, and you're progressing just fine. Now, you want to change things up. Remember what I said about variety. Say you start doing a reverse curl. Okay, well, that introduces different muscles. Okay, so therefore, you're going to get the soreness again. Okay, because it's different muscles. And the same holds true if you do a hammer curl or any of that. And I'm just using that as an example, any of the exercises that you do. But you mentioned earlier this evening about heavy exercise. You don't want to do heavy exercises anymore. Well, no.
No.
Then don't. You want to do light dumbbell exercises, maybe barbell exercise, but you don't to do the heavy stuff, okay? Replace the heavy stuff by doing a lighter weight and possibly more repetitions, okay? You may even consider exercising, depending upon what your workout is, how light it is, you may consider exercising every day, okay? Depends on what your purpose is. If you're going to, if you want to develop muscle, if you want to get stronger, you want to progress, then it's good to have a recuperation type day in between your exercises. And, of course, like I've always said, if you feel stale or you feel tired, you don't feel like doing it, instead of Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, do a Monday, Thursday. Give yourself 2 days in between your workouts, but you already know that. And
yeah,
that helps in many ways. And you don't have to use dumbbells or barbells. You can use body weight exercises, you know, like you say, the Charles Atlas, you know, with the, you know, the push-ups and you know, squats and stuff like that. The important thing is to keep moving, and then you won't have any problem. Keep your diet under control. You know, avoid the processed foods as much as you can. Usually, processed foods are concentrated foods. Like, for example, you know, people will say things like, "Well, rather than have a soda." That's what they call it in where you're at. We call it pop here in the Midwest. So what I do is I call it soda pop, you know. But anyway, they say, I don't want to have a soda. I'll have a glass of juice. Well, that glass of juice can be just as sugar heavy as that soda. And what I do, every once in a while I have a craving for orange juice, okay, I will cut it with water. I will fill up the glass halfway with cold water and then fill it the rest of the way with orange juice. No, it doesn't have the intense sweet orange juice taste, but it gives me an idea that it does have orange in it, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
And I like juices like, you know, like tomato juice or V8 and stuff like that. Here's the thing, though. A concentrated food, like, and I just gave fruit juice as an example. Imagine how many oranges how many tomatoes you would have to eat, you know, to equal a glass of tomato juice or orange juice. You see what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many other concentrated foods, you know, that are, you know, you're packing a great deal of nutriment into a small area. So when you eat it to get satiated, and it usually takes about 20 minutes for the signal to go from your brain or from your digestive organs to your brain, okay, to feel satiated. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing people have to remember when they're eating. Have a pleasant conversation when you're eating, unless you're eating alone. Sometimes you can have a conversation with yourself, but less argument. But anyway, slowly eat your food. Masticate the food in your mouth. You know, don't bolt it down. You know, when I was a kid, my father and mother would go crazy. Don't eat so fast. You're bolting your food. You know, you're not a dog, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was hungry, you know. My brother and I I'll tell you what, we could put away the groceries. You know, we went through milk like you wouldn't believe. And you know, other foods. It was nothing for me to, you know, when I was involved in sports, I'd have 4 sandwiches for lunch. You know, I was just ravenous hungry all the time. But, you know, I was burning it up. I had the metabolism of a blast furnace. I mean, I'm just going through it. I was always hungry. But the thing is, as you get older, this metabolism slows down. And when it slows down, if you don't get that appetite under control, that food consumption under control, you're going to gain weight. And the weight you're going to gain, a lot of it will be fat. you know.
Yeah.
And that's something that you have to keep under control, especially as you age. You know, the composition of your body changes. You know, you might weigh the same. You see, you say to yourself, "Well, I weigh the same. I should be in the same, you know, shape and whatever." Well, you're losing muscle mass. You might be gaining fat. You see what's going on there.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a swap out. I think I mentioned this once before where you wonder why older men wear suspenders. You don't see many young men, unless it's fashion, you know, you don't see many young men wearing suspenders. Well, the reason older men wear suspenders is they're losing body mass, especially in their buttocks, okay?
In that area
that holds your pants up. So your pants will slip off, okay? So you wear suspenders. And the same way, if you look at an older man's shoulders, he loses body mass in his shoulders also. Unfortunately, he will gain a paunch in front, okay, which is usually fat, okay? So, again, you have to keep that under control. What's the best way? Avoid the carbohydrates. And carbohydrates, the bad carbohydrates like bread and pasta, which I go crazy over, those are concentrated foods, okay? You have to avoid them. If you want to go on a diet, and I've said this to many people, pay close attention to the carbohydrates. Like, for example, and I think we touched base on this, if someone is diabetic, they already know about carbohydrates because their doctor has already explained that to them. You got to keep an eye on those carbohydrates because you got to maintain that sensitive balance, okay, with your insulin. So, but a person who doesn't have that is not familiar with controlling the carbohydrate intake. You can lose weight, okay, as long as you exercise, you will maintain your muscle. When I say losing weight, if your goal is to lose fat, okay, continue to exercise and avoid carbohydrates. Eliminate the starches, like I say, pasta and bread. Be careful with potatoes.
Corn, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Corn and stuff like that. Now, this doesn't mean you go absolutely bonkers and say, well, I can eat all the meat I want, you know, and all that. No. You know, you have to be very careful. Eat your food, eat your meals slow. Let that signal, your blood sugar, the signal, get to your brain, okay? I discovered this years ago, and this is an interesting story. It's a short story. I remember sitting at the table with my wife and children. And right in the middle of the meal, I got an important call. I couldn't avoid taking it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It was right in the middle of the meal. I was hungry when I got up, but I went and took the call in the other room. And I was on the phone for about a half hour. And I came back, sat down, and I didn't have any appetite.
Mm.
I had an appetite when I got up and went on the phone, believe me. It was gone. That was it. And that told me right there that if I get a phone call at every time we had supper, midway through, I'd probably lose 10 pounds the first week.
That's very true. I know recently I've been doing some writing, and I wrote the foreword for one of our hosts, their book. And I wrote two chapters, one for one anthology with one publisher and another for another anthology with another publisher. And this is in addition to the podcast and the teaching that I do and so forth. So my day was very busy and very heavily scheduled. And I would find sometimes that it's like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and I haven't eaten anything. Because I was just so involved in what I was doing. And that, too, that reinforced that a lot of the hunger I feel isn't true hunger because, otherwise I would have felt it when I was busily engaged in everything. So, you know, just to take a few steps back when you feel hungry and ask yourself where the impulse is coming from.
Right, right. And you know, we live in a society, especially with the media, we're getting bombarded constantly. And used to be just, say, radio way back in the day, and then television. Now you've got the pictures of the food, and it always looks very, very appetizing.
Yeah.
And now you have the Internet. You constantly see foods across the screen. So you have to keep that in mind. The other thing that's very important is eating when you eat and how much. For example, a lot of people don't eat breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
People in rural areas like out west in Nebraska, you know, where there's a lot of farms and stuff, or down south, stuff like that. People that live on a farm, their day starts at 4 a.m. in the morning. They're up before dawn. And their work, you know, they've got so many chores to do, you know, depending upon the farm that they have. By 8 o'clock, they're starved. They're hungry, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's their breakfast. You take somebody that that lives in the city and whatnot, they're not that hungry at 8 a.m. in the morning, so they skip breakfast and stuff like that. But the thing is, when you get up in the morning, it's important to eat something, a good quality food. It could be a dish of fruit. It could be some type of healthy, you know, cereal, an oatmeal, or something like that. Okay, eggs, sausage, you know, stuff like that. You know,
mm-hmm.
And then 4 hours later, let's just say we'll throw out 4 hours. Say around, you know, dinner time. That's what it's called in the South, dinner. Don't say lunch. They don't like that word. It's dinner time. And, you know, around noon, then you have your noon meal. And then 4:30, 5 o'clock, you have your supper. Okay? If you can maintain that and not eat so much, because there are people, and I've known them, and I've done it myself, I don't have time for breakfast, or I'm not hungry enough. And then I skip lunch. And by the time supper comes around, I'm starved, okay? And when you're starved, you tend to eat faster, and you tend to overeat. And then what do you mm-hmm. do after supper? Unless you train, unless your training regimen requires, you know, you wait an hour, let's say, and you train, you sit. You become, you know, sedentary, say, mm-hmm. television or whatever you're doing, okay? I try to move around after a meal. You know, that's what I try to do. But for me, it's a habit. Humans respond very quickly to a regimen.
Yes.
They adapt habits very quickly, both bad and good. And believe me, after you develop that habit, usually takes a while, it's hard to shake, both good and bad. And just like exercise, if you get into the habit of exercising, your body comes to expect it.
Yes.
Like eating, the same way. You get up in the morning, your body expects to eat. Around noon, it expects to eat. So you're getting into a biorhythm, and that's what you have to have. You know, in many cases, you throw that out of whack. It's like sleep. If you throw your sleep out of whack, okay, that's tough. You want to always sleep for the same amount of time, go to bed at the same time, go to sleep, wake up at the same time every day, and you mm-hmm. get into a rhythm. And that's essentially what it's about.
And habits are good that way because they become automatic, like you said. You know, if you exercise every day or do anything every day, if you don't do it, you're going to feel something's missing or not well. I know if I miss a day of working out, I feel like I've done something bad, you know, that catch up, you know.
Or, you know, you go and you get you get a feeling of guilt, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You want to get rid of that guilt, you know. Miss a training program or, you know, And that's tough many times because, you know, an unexpected call, somebody says, hey, what are you doing? Let's go do this or that. And it's a real temptation to go, you know. And, you know, you say to yourself, oh, we're going to train. And, you know, I really feel like I could really get a benefit from it. You know, I feel really feel like training and stuff like that. And you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. You don't want to say, well, I'd rather not go. I'd rather argue with a barbell, you know. And I can understand, you know, how they would react to that.
Yes, that is very, very true. I've developed the habit of when I'm doing something like watching a TV or watching a movie on the television screen, I don't need to be sitting. That's when I do a lot of my exercises too. You know, so
right.
We'll watch a movie and I will not be sitting. I'll be standing and I'll be messing around with the weights. I'll be messing around with the cables. I'll be messing around with something. And this way I can watch the movie and enjoy it, but I'm not wasting my time watching a movie or watching a television show.
You mentioned earlier that you write, okay?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know this, but it's a bit of trivia because I read a lot about writers and stuff. Ernest Hemingway. He typed standing up. He had a manual typewriter, and that's how he did a lot when he wasn't, doing other things. When he did a lot of his writing, he was doing it standing up.
I can
see
that.
As I recall, you did know that?
No, I didn't know that, but I can see that. If my eyes were better than they were, I'd be doing that a lot of the time too. But
yeah, I know what you mean. My arms are getting too short, but you know, it's a funny thing. It's a funny thing about that. I think the reasoning was that he had maybe an old injury. I don't recall what it was, but I read this. And I think it was due to an injury or he had his back gave him problems, but he did that. Another thing that I found interesting about another writer is you've heard of Robert Louis Stevenson.
Yes.
He wrote The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I think that's the title. Anyway, that was from a dream.
From a dream, yes.
And he sat down the next day and he wrote it out in 2 weeks. I think it was two weeks or was it a few days? I don't remember. It was a very, very short,
I don't remember either.
Very short period of time. But I thought that was interesting. It was a dream that he had. Man,
yeah,
I think I'd sleep with a light on.
I've been working with my dreams since childhood, and some of the books got destroyed over time or got lost, but I still have plastic bins full of dreams. And I don't dream every single night that I remember, but some nights I'll remember like 15, 20 dreams. It's really interesting. We live other lives, and it's a shame not to remember it. We're living in different places. We're doing different things. Sometimes we're with different people. Sometimes we're different people. And it's really amazing how much activity goes on at night. But lately, one of the book companies that I work with has been interested in my dreams and my meditations and my astral journeys. And I've had a few of them published already. So that's really cool because it's like another aspect of my life. I could share that now too. And I have tons of material, so I won't run out of dreams to write about.
Well, that's interesting. That's
very
interesting that you have all of that documented. You know, a lot of people, you know, some people, you've heard of people, diaries, you know, journals and stuff like that, where they make a note of different things. I never did it when I was real young. I started doing it about 20 some years ago, but it's sporadic, you know. But it's good to refer to some of the stuff, if nothing else, what happened when, you know. That's
right.
That's really good. But, you know, to document a lot of that stuff, another author who was a strange duck to begin with was Serling. What was his first name? Robert Serling. the Twilight Zone.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of the stuff that he came up with was from dreams. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, can you imagine that? I mean, he has some real off-the-wall stuff. I mean, it's way out there, you know. But, yeah, he was another one, you know. But, I mean, you know, actually, when you do writing, and I do some, and the thing is, a lot of times you have to sit down, you have to think of a topic, you know. And
right.
I'm always taking notes and stuff. Might be from a television program or something I see on the internet or a conversation I have with somebody, and I'll jot it down, you know, in my cell phone. I'll put it in my notes, or I'll write it down on a piece of paper when I'm home, you know, and then I'll come up with a storyline, you know, in reference to something. But a lot of the writers come up with their ideas or their inspiration, I should say, from, you know, different experiences throughout their life,
mm-hmm.
you know. And some of them are very, very successful where they, you know, you wouldn't think they had a book in them. And I tell people, everybody has a book in them.
Yep.
You know, and then, they, you know, when I suggest that they write a book, they come up with all the excuses in the world not to. And I shoot them down every single one of their excuses. Well, I can't write. Well, you can talk.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't write, speak into a recorder. Well, I can't spell and I can't punctuate. Ah, there's people that can do that for you. I don't have the time. Well, you got a half hour, write a page a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Well, I don't know how to get started. Well, you start with an outline. You know, and it just goes on and on and on. There are several people that have written books, but you'll notice that is it'll have a byline, so-and-so, you know, they have a title, and then by so-and-so as told to.
Yes.
Well, that told to person is the ghostwriter. That's right. The guy you want. And there's some of them that are very highly paid because they're very good writers. But, you know, a lot of these celebrities, even the ones in Hollywood or especially sports figures, you know, they can't write. I mean, that's not their focus in life, you know. But
they
that's
get
just how it goes. Oh, yeah.
When I was 17, I submitted a book to a major publisher, and they wanted to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too long a story to get into, you know, but I wound up not writing the book, but while I was engaged in the process, they said that I shouldn't worry. They wanted the information and the insights, and they said they could always get somebody to actually write the book for me. So,
yeah,
so that's very true. And people collaborate on books all the time.
Yeah, and sadly, many times, if a publisher buys the book and pays you, they have the ownership and the rights to the book many times. And sadly, sometimes, not always, but they will change it around because they want to sell books, you know, where your heart and soul is in that book the way it is, the way it is written. Unfortunately, theirs is in what kind of return can I get for my investment, you know.
It's a process. Like one of the chapters I wrote is for a major publisher, and it's already been edited informally once by one of the other writers who's also an editor. So I worked through that and I made the changes because there were good suggestions. You know, not everyone knows what's going on inside your head. So sometimes you need somebody to point that out to you in things that you've written. And now the editor is going to be editing it. And then I was told other people from the publisher would be editing it. So I was told to expect the writing and rewriting this for quite a while. But it's okay because I'm learning. And if I'm going to aim for bigger publishing houses in the future, I need to, you know, be able to go through whatever process they have in order to get your information. And I know already that it's going to be altered. You know, it's not going to be the initial thoughts that I put down on paper, but it'll be a process.
Right.
And if it's done correctly, though, it'll make it shine, like shining a rough rock or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting what people go through, you know, different ways of writing books and stuff like that. I was told many years ago, the way you start writing a book is you write the last chapter first. And first, you know, when you stop and think about that, you say, well, that's nuts. No. The way it was explained to me, you have to have a target. Where is this all going to go? If you don't know where you're going, well, first of all, you don't know when you get.
Right.
And you have no direction, you know. But I was told that many years ago. Write the last chapter first. Yeah, especially with something that's a fiction, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What's really a big hit nowadays is children's books. You'd be surprised at people that write children's books, you know, that have written adult books and stuff like that for many years. You know, they came up with an idea for a children's book.
Mm-hmm.
And the way society is, especially in this country, there needs to be, you know, wholesome children's books with a message, you know, positive thinking. You know, everybody gets along, you know,
right.
No bullying, stuff like that. The problems that we have in society, if they can be nipped in the bud when our population, with our children, you know, and then it wouldn't be warded off, you know, and may not happen.
Yeah, it's an exciting world out there. There are many exciting fields you can get into, and bodybuilding, physical culture, weightlifting, whatever name you want to ascribe to it, and writing and other art, you know, they're some of the things we do between birth and death to give our life meaning and
yeah.
to give us full expression. And
right.
we're toward the end of our conversation today. Again, I apologize for the technical difficulties, but I want to, again, thank you, because you've kept so many books that otherwise would have been impossible to get or very expensive to get, you know, through antiquarian booksellers and collectors and so forth. You've kept them in print and affordable and very easy to find. Even though I've known about you and admired you for many years, I really love being your friend and speaking with you, because you're entertaining, you're a great person with a good heart, you're very generous with your writing, you put out a free newsletter for people, and you convey a lot of interesting insights and information, you've been very faithful to your life work, and super strength training has been going on for years and years and years and years, and it's still going strong and it's evolving with the times. I still like the old catalogs. I have a bunch of them.
Good.
But
I'm truly honored, because I feel the same way. I feel honored to be your friend, and
thank you.
I think your podcast reaches a huge audience. I listen to the other podcasts. I find them fascinating and interesting on a variety of different topics, you know, and trying to keep the word out there and trying to keep, you know, people aware that there are ways of training that, sad to say, are being overlooked nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a very important thing. Yeah, I've been doing it well over 50 years now.
Wow.
And maybe I'll do it another 50.
That muscle power. How can people find you, and how can people look through the catalog, and how can people sign up for your newsletter and get more immersed in the world that you've allowed to exist?
Sure. Go on the internet and type in superstrengthtraining.com, and my website will pop up, and there's usually a window that pops up that says free old school training secrets, tips, methods, history, and biographies. Sign up now. Just type in your first and last name and your email address, and hit the red sign me up, and you'll be signed up, and you should get an email, a welcome email that tells you that you're going to get future emails, you know, that you are signed up. And if you'd like, there's another page that you can, under free stuff, you can get my free weightlifting catalog. There you type in your first and last name, your address, city, state, zip code, country, and your email and your phone. The phone is important because a lot of times people will inadvertently type in the wrong email. I know I've done it. Mm-hmm. And then down at the bottom, after you have all that filled out, well, you can also, how do you find us? You can type in, you know, Hercules Podcast or whatever, list your interests. That helps a lot. So I have an idea of future emails. And then there's a little red box that says Request Now. And click on that. And, again, you'll get a email that says you will be getting my free catalog, the 24-page catalog that I've been sending out for, you know, 50 years. And it's interesting for people like, for example, Hercules and myself that like an ink and paper, touchy-feely type of arrangement.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, where you can underline stuff and you dog-ear the pages or whatever you want to do with it. And, you know, some people have several of mine. You know, they collect them over the years. But nevertheless, that's how you find me.
Bill, thank you so very much. I wish you success in all of your endeavors, both the ones that you currently are upholding and any new ones that you undertake. And I'm looking forward to our next conversation, which will be off the air. But I know I'll still get tons of really relevant and helpful information told in a very entertaining way.
Thank you very kindly. I appreciate the kind words.
Be well, my friend. Be well to all our listeners, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called and you are patiently waiting in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Good night, everyone. And thanks again, Bill.
Thank you very kindly. God bless.